Welcome to Not Home Alone, a podcast from the family ministry at St. Albans Episcopal Church in Waco, Texas. I'm your host, Stephanie Drum, and I'm the minister to children, youth, and families here at St. Albans. My co-hosts for this series will be our two clergy, Aaron Zimmerman and Neil McGowan. In this series on parenting, we're looking at the love and logic technique, which helps you understand various skills you can use to foster security, independence, and love in your children.
What's up, nerds?
Hey, everyone.
I just stole Stephanie's opening line. That's, if anybody doesn't know, that's how Stephanie greets everybody.
I do. I say that a lot. It's loving.
Hey,
nerds
are
right?
Cool like now.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, exactly. Nerds
are... Do you say that to your parents?
No, I don't. I don't think my dad, he wouldn't like think it's funny or not funny. He would just be like, why are you... He wouldn't understand, you know? My mom might like it, but...
Okay, got it.
Yeah, so we're here on episode 4. We're back with Aaron and Neil to talk about a few more skills for love and logic. So we hope you've been enjoying these skills so far and learning a little bit more about maybe yourself and your children. Before we get started, I wanted to say, just for everybody listening, that especially if you are living in November of 2020, then you know that right now is a very stressful time. And we know this episode may come out a little bit later, but we just want to acknowledge that things are very stressful right now, and we want to be cognizant of that as we're speaking.
Well, we want you to be gracious with yourself, to know that 2020 being what it is, it's hard for seasoned experts, and for the rest of us, it's especially hard. And so have a little grace with yourself and with your children, too, who are likely struggling as well. And just know that it's a difficult time to be at home.
Yeah, that's right. And so because we are aware that, you know, a parenting method can come across as something else you're not doing right. And really, we don't want to lay this down like some sort of other way for you to feel like a failure in life. We really want to help and encourage you. So we encourage you just in acknowledging parenting is hard, and kids are master manipulators, and we're they're devious, and we're here just to try to offer some helpful ideas that you can try out. And so if you listen to week one and you get one thing out of it, and week two and you get another thing out of it, and then that one doesn't stick, and you know, but you still got one thing. You've helped in that one little way. So that's kind of what we're trying to do here.
And these are skills for your toolbox. You don't use every tool all at the same time. So if one thing works, then great. Use that till kingdom come. But if another thing works better, then do that. If it doesn't work as well, just feel free to use these things as they work for you. That's really how love and logic is set up. And you can just, as you listen, like Aaron was saying, just you can get one thing every week or however that works for you. And also, if I want to encourage you that if you really are having an issue with parenting, or your child is really struggling with something specific that you find is not, you are not having a good remedy for, love and logic even encourages you to seek professional help if that's what you need. It doesn't mean you're a failure.
That's right. Call Neil
McGowan. Call a licensed counselor. We can give you some recommendations.
We can. And it doesn't mean you're a failure. It just means that everybody needs help, and that's okay.
And by the way, I just want to say thank you to, shout out to Stephanie Piper for giving us a shout out on Facebook.
Thanks, Stephanie.
About how this has been helpful to her. So thanks, Stephanie. And if you're listening. And also, if this is helpful to you, or there are specific topics you'd like us to cover, this is not a radio call-in show. Hi, Stephanie, long-time listener.
I'm listening.
It's not that. So if you can email nothomealone@stalbanswaco.org, or you can reach out via the St. Albans Children's Ministry Facebook page or the general Facebook page for the church. Just whatever. Just reach out. And we'll see what we can do. And we'll, at the end of this podcast, we'll actually address some of the questions that we have already gotten from a listener.
Which is exciting. So without further ado, we're going to talk about two more skills. And this first one is a little bit of a redo because we've already mentioned it in previous episodes. And skill number six is the uh-oh song.
I was hoping for more ado.
Well...
No more ado
than I've already done. So,
okay, it's a done.
It's done. So the uh-oh song. I know in the Zimmerman household, y'all do the so sad song, but it has the same purpose.
So
I think.
Sad.
So sad. This skill is intended for younger children, right?
Yeah. This is at the age where you cannot really have a rational conversation with a child. That stage ends at about age 35. And until then, you know.
I'm still getting there.
Thank you. So 9 months to 3 years is where this would kind of take place, that age range. And it's, you know, if a child does something wrong and you walk into the living room. And this is a true story from my childhood. My grandparents walked in the room and they had this is very not cool now. They had a rug made from a spider monkey.
Why isn't that cool?
So it's this like big furry, like black and white rug. Well, I mean, it's still
cool,
but
it's
not very, you know, it wouldn't be PC these days. Yeah. Yeah. It was not a large, it was a circular rug. It sort of like would be good in your bedside. Anyways, we had gotten into some, I think it was like my grandmother's makeup or something, and we had just decorated the spider monkey rug. And I think there was some freaking out that happened. And so if you walk in and you freak out, oh my God, what are you doing? It's a crazy, go to your room. You've immediately indicated to the child that they have a lot of power over you and your emotions. And that is a lever that they will absolutely use and also carry on with them. So the uh-oh song is a way, again, Love and Logic is as much about kind of helping parents train themselves as it is to kind of help children learn how to navigate the world. So if you have something that you can say, uh-oh, or so sad, that allows you to calm down, gives you a time to kind of think about how you want to respond and it's not a scary sort of thing, because there are many times a child will have made a mistake and actually
or they
not
don't
their
know
fault. And so again, you just need to think through, right? Or they don't know, and you just let them know that by singing gently, uh oh, or so sad, then it's and uh oh is even more like value neutral. It's just like uh oh, and then you can just remove them from the situation, carry them to their room or a place where they cannot hurt themselves or others or damage further property. So a high chair can be great.
I also
something like that.
I think this is great because you just said you're not really ascribing moral value to it yet because they're too young to really understand. Well, nobody told me not to destroy this rug. Like I remember when I may not have even been born yet, but my mother told me a story about how my older brother, drew all over the walls of their new house. And he was young, and she told him not to do it again, but, you know, she didn't punish him because he didn't know not to. I mean, you're, especially right. In a developing brain, the world is your oyster. I mean, they don't know unless you tell them.
A white wall looks like a white canvas.
This is that. Exactly. A white wall looks like a white canvas. And the uh-oh song is intended to create those connections in their brain of here's the boundary and I can do things within this. And it's not saying, oh, you're a bad kid. It's just creating the associations.
Right. And so you want to not use too many words. Just uh-oh is sufficient. They can put it together. There's like now a consequence for this action. So you move them away to a place where they are safe, but cannot continue to engage in whatever the behavior is. If you've asked them to spend some time in their room, not ask, but if you say it's time, uh-oh, time to go to your room, and when you, we're happy to have you come back when you can act sweet or when you feel better. You can ask them, would you like your door open or closed? And again, that's giving the child some decision about the situation and some agency for them, which respects their dignity and doesn't make them feel kind of so powerless. And then when they return, like they've figured out what they've done, they will probably just run up to you and a hug and I love you is enough. Again, parents are, and I'm totally guilty of this. I mean, I'm a preacher for crying out loud, to like talk more than I need to. But
I don't know what you're talking about.
Just the uh-oh. No. I know. And I'd like to now talk for two more paragraphs about the uh-oh song. So you move them to another place. You don't give a long lecture. Just, uh-oh, so sad that this happened and we'll put you here until you feel like you can come and be sweet. Do you want your door open or closed? Closed. Okay, fine. Close it. And I'll see you when you've had some time and you, you're ready to act sweet. And then you leave and then they come to you and you just hug them and say, I love you. And that's it. And they have learned, you've saved some angst. Again, this is an idealized situation. It might not always work like this, but this is just one of the tools.
The kicker with this is when the kid runs out of the room. I will say they don't often willingly stay in the room or keep the door shut. And this is from personal experience. And so you do have to sort of, it may involve a little more active involvement on your part to make sure that they stay in the room or that they sort of think it through. But it is, we found with ours, simply going into the room is often enough of a consequence to see that I can't play. I'm not behaving such that I can play with everyone else, so I have to kind of go by myself. And it's a quick reformation from that.
Right, and they even say, I mean, if they are kind of worked up, they don't need to necessarily be in their room longer than 3 or 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be a long sort of – it's not intended to be a punishment. It's just to say, you're going over here for a while until we can act better, and then – you can be welcomed back, and that's it.
Yep, and you know we've said this before, but this love and logic is really to try to create a real paradigm shift in the mind of parents who think that punishment is the way to create behavior improvements. So, kind of carrot and stick. I'll reward you if you do something good. I'll punish you if you do something bad. That is the opposite of love and logic. Love and logic is natural consequences for your actions. So a natural consequence for a child who's behaving inappropriately is to go spend some time by themselves to cool off and then come back. I mean, we as adults do that for ourselves when we're in a situation that we know we need some cool offing time. So I think it's natural consequences. It's not punishment or reward. It's to help them in their developing brains learn what the limits are. And And I would say that there are variants of the uh-oh song that continue as your children age. So if you catch your child in a lie, which you will, because that's how they learn about lying and what it does to relationships, you can say, you know, once you've done that, the middle school or teenage version of the uh-oh song is, you know, this makes me really sad and this is a real bummer that I feel like I can't trust you now. We'll have to figure out ways that you can help rebuild that trust. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Like, that's all you say. And that's kind of like so sad or, oh, like you're acknowledging the thing, but you're not blowing your top. You're not, I can't believe you lied to me. It's all that, like, and so, and that's not a punishment, but that is a consequence of when someone lies to you, it does break trust. And so, and it does take time to rebuild it. So it's a concept that, again, the uh-oh song is good for the, you know, 9 months to 3 years, but also it can be developed and adapted as children age.
Right. So in this sort of scenario, the parent is able to be seen by the child as that loving authority.
Yes.
Like we've talked about in the past, without them lecturing, because, you know, I mean, you can argue with a 3-year-old, but do you want to, you know? And without...
Ain't nobody got time for
and
that.
And without resorting to threats or spanking or anything like that.
If you ever want to see an example of how futile this is, go onto YouTube and search Linda Lookit.
Oh, yes. I've seen
there's
that.
There's a video of where the mom is sort of like... arguing, and the kid is like, Linda, Lookit. Linda, Lookit. And it's cute and precious, but again, in this situation, probably... One, don't call me Linda. Two, it's just not going anywhere to argue with a little kid.
Not in the drum household, that's for sure. I'm just kidding.
That was a highway to nowhere.
Right. All right, so let's we can move right along to skill number 7. And this is...
Numero siete.
This is a pretty specific skill, I will say. It falls back on some of the other ones, and it uses some of the other skills that we've talked about. But it's I see it almost as a case study in some of the other skills. And this one is called the strategic training session. And this skill focuses on teaching children to listen and comply with you the first time that you ask. And this, I think that this skill is intended is for when they have not done a great job of this in the past. So if there's a problem presenting itself, then the strategic training session is hoping to address that. Aaron, did you have an example of this before we... I actually have an example from the book, but if I'm curious if you have used this in the past.
Oh, I got an example. So,
I jump right in, though? This one does remind me a little bit of Arrested Development, the television show from... I guess mid-2000s.
Jason Bateman,
that's right. Yes. And that's why you always leave a note.
Yeah.
They go to great lengths to terrify the children.
Yes.
We're not suggesting that, but it does is similar.
It does have some pre-planning, but there's no no loss of limb or anything like that. And that's why there's always, that's why you always leave a note.
Yeah. And I'd say one of the other kind of underlying principles between this strategic training session is that you as a parent – so love and logic occurs a couple things. One, for you to be mindful about your own parenting and kind of think ahead. Like there, as you said, there's some planning here. Like, and it's kind of fun. Like it gives you some creativity to think about, okay, this is a situation that's driving me crazy. I don't have to just take this miserable situation. I can actually do something about it. Because if you are in that miserable situation where there's like an ongoing pattern of destructive or inappropriate behavior and you're dealing with all the emotional consequences of it and your child has none, then clearly there's an imbalance of that power relationship there. The other thing about this is you are helping the child to not go to jail.
Because there are
lots of situations. There's so many situations in life where you don't get asked 2, 3, 4, 5 times. It's like... you get asked to put your hands on the hood of the car one time or whatever,
right.
You know, that's kind of an extreme example, but you'd be surprised. Your first DUI is already a lot of trouble. You don't get second chances with that kind of thing. So again, this is not being mean, although if you have never used your parental authority lovingly in this way, it might feel that way, but just remember, it's helping your children be prepared for the realities of life by you, a loving person who's not doing this in some sort of mean way. So here's an example of just getting a child to realize their consequences if they don't comply the first time you ask. The children are in the living room playing with their toys, and there's barely a single visible spot of the floor because there's toys everywhere. And you have bins and things that make actually cleaning up pretty easy. All you have to do is dump them in the bins and put the bins in the little cubby. We often have this situation where it's like, okay, time to clean up, and nothing would happen. Time to clean up, nothing would happen. So the love and logic skill that we learned and began to try was to say, it's time to clean up, and I'll be happy to clean up for you if you can't do it. Or however we'd say it, like, you know, if you guys aren't able to clean up, we'll be back in 5 minutes. If you're not able to clean up, we'll go ahead and do that for you. And we didn't even explain what that meant. We just said, it's time to clean up. We'll see you in 5 minutes. Set the timer for 5 minutes. Come back in. Uh-oh, so sad. Like, nothing's cleaned up. Well, I guess I'll have to clean it up. And so we just got bags. We had just big trash bags because a ton of toys. We just put everything in the trash bags. And we didn't throw it away. And we put it in a place where they could see it. And we said, cleaning up took a lot of my energy. Maybe you can figure out some ways that you can help me get my energy back. And I'd be happy to share your, you know, to have, let you have your toys back again. And so the way they would help us get our energy back was by doing little chores around the house, or, you know, putting their plates away after dinner or whatever the thing was, you know, and they would get creative about doing it. And when they did something, we'd give the toys back. And so, and that really only happened once for each of them.
I was going to say, that doesn't happen very often, does it?
Right. And so again, it's not, if you are a parent that will tell your child to clean up 20 times and then ultimately do it yourself, there's really no difference between that and this, except you're just doing it right away and letting them have it, like letting them learn the consequences of their actions here. And you are giving them an opportunity to get their toys back in a way that makes sense. And it actually gives you dignity, value, and respect, because your time and energy is valuable. And your children should learn to respect that, because you want them to treat their professors like their time and energy is valuable. You want them to be kids that read the syllabus. You want them to be kids that just are aware of other people and their time. And so you're helping them learn that lesson. And again, you're not doing any of this in a cruel way. You're not like picking up the toys and laughing maniacally as you do so. You're just being chill about
Speak
it.
Speak for
like,
yourself.
Oh, looks like I'll pick it up. Yeah.
Just kidding.
Maybe Stephanie is. Ah, ha, ha, ha. So yeah, you just pick it up and say, you know, so sad. I'll pick it up, but don't worry. You can help me figure out how to get some of my energy back, and we'll work out a way where you can maybe earn some of your toys back. So that's an example of a strategic training session that we kind of had planned. But the one that you had, mm-hmm. Stephanie, from the book was a really great one well. And I love it because it's like Ocean's 11.
It's too much for me. I can't ever see myself having this foresight.
You might if you had a kid throwing a fit in public every day. But I understand mm-hmm. that it does – this skill, at least the example that they gave in the book, it's on page 151 of Parenting with Love and Logic, under a kind of a mini chapter called Discipline in Public. And it does require some pre-planning and some help from friends. But they tell the story about a mom who goes to the grocery store and her daughter always misbehaves every time they go. And she makes an arrangement with a friend beforehand, and she asks her to station herself kind of by the payphone. I'm assuming they're going to Walmart because they say the Walmart payphone. And so when the daughter starts acting up...
And this was in like 1987,
yeah, exactly.
Apparently, because payphones...
So, you know, whatever
I'm out of quarters.
Yeah. So whenever the daughter starts acting up, she says, would you rather behave or would you rather go sit in your room? And... side note, this is an enforceable statement in this situation, because when the daughter continues, her mother brings her outside and she calls the friend who is in the parking lot or around the corner and picks her up and takes the child home and brings her to her room. Now, this can be a spouse as
Boom.
Well. And so the mom goes about her chores or she goes about her shopping in a pleasant way, and she returns home happy because she hasn't had a screaming child. And presumably the daughter is happy to see her. There's no real punishment there except she goes home. No lecturing. And she realizes that if I act up in public, I'm going to get sent home or whatever it is. Even it doesn't even have to be shopping, grocery shopping. That's kind of an errand. But even if you're doing something fun, like going to the park, something that can be cut short is kind of the example that mm-hmm. they give. And so... for this skill, they do say to create this sort of activity that you have control over, an activity that can be cut short, and set that enforceable limit without very many reminders. And then if you do have to follow through on that limit, provide the empathy that we talked about in our last episode. And make mm-hmm. sure not to argue with them. Don't tell them what they already know, because they probably know why you're doing what you're doing. You don't have to say, oh, I'm sending you home because you've been behaving so badly. You've been doing this for the last 6 months. You don't have to say any of that.
Yeah.
They know why.
Yeah. And this is, again, to our earlier point, this is not a punishment. This is a natural consequence for someone who cannot behave in public. I guarantee you. Police get called to targets all the time to deal with people mm-hmm. who can't behave in public. And so, again, this is it's not a punishment. You're getting sent home. It's and as you know, this example, it you give the child a choice. Would you rather behave or go sit in your room? it's giving them that decision point, which they absolutely know what the choices are. And then there's, as you say, that immediate consequence. If they don't then behave, they go sit in their room. Again, which is not a terrible thing. Like, this is not a punishment. This is just a natural consequence. If you need time to cool off, we'll give you time to cool off. And they learn that they are not in control of you.
Right. And I do think this is a bit of an extension from the delayed consequences. It's taking the same sort of principle, but it's putting it into an actual situation, and they give an example of that. So this may work different ways for different people, but like Aaron was saying with the picking up your toys example, this is not one that you're going to have to use all the time. It's a maybe once, twice, three times, and then they get the message sort of scenario. Mm-hmm. And not one that is necessarily intended to be used all the time, like maybe the other skills, like empathy.
Right. Yeah, this is something that's like, again, you've noticed that this is a repeated issue, and it has to sort of be a repeated issue so that you can even plan like what your strategy is going to be about it. This is going to be for sort of special situations.
Yeah.
Well, should we do our questions now?
Yeah, it's a good time for some questions and answers. What's our first question, Aaron?
This comes from Susan in Poughkeepsie. No, we will protect the identities of all our questioners, but these are some really good questions. So this parent writes and asks first, kind of, what does loving authority look like? And I think, and this person... and I don't know if this is a typo or not, but said, how do I be a loving authoritarian? And I just, I think we want to be clear that we're not advocating anybody be an authoritarian. We are saying that as a parent, you do have authority, and it's good to realize that you have that authority and to be thoughtful about how you use it. And so I'd say, what does loving authority look like? It can look like lots of different things, but it creates boundaries that make sense. Clear expectations, so the child knows what he or she should be doing and what's appropriate. And then loving, another part of that loving authority is that you make sure that there are enforceable, logical consequences when those boundaries are broken. And I think, the question for a parent to ask him or herself, if you want to know, am I showing loving authority? Ask yourself, in our household, who is making most of the decisions? Is it the parent or is it the child? Who is sort of ruling the roost? And if it's the child and you're sort of constantly pulling your hair out trying to manage the situation, then that's a time for some, again, boundaries and then clear consequences when those boundaries are exceeded or ignored. Ways that parents can set loving boundaries and exhibit loving authority is to give clear expectations about what are the appropriate limits for screen time. What are the appropriate limits for eating sweets? What are the appropriate limits for chores? So your child should know what his or her chore is. Your child should know when screens are, when the green light is on for screens. And if there are no boundaries, then the child will, that's almost too much freedom, and you'll have a really hard time exhibiting your authority, because the only lever you'll have is to come in and just try to say stop and kind of drill sergeant your way to some sort of compliance. So I think the other question you can ask yourself as a parent is, and this is something that I still struggle with, am I doing anything for the child that the child could actually do for him or herself? And if I find myself like rewashing dishes, then I've taken on something that maybe I need to have the child figure out how to do. And so I think that's what loving authority looks like. Some of the things.
Can I jump in here?
Jump in. Yeah, go ahead.
As a parent, you already have power. And part of learning to use power is recognizing what you have. And I had this when I was teaching middle school. My first year as a new teacher, I found my students acting up and behavior issues. And it dawned on me one day, I actually have all the power in the class. if I just recognize that that's the case. And I can use this power to help the students, to help the class function, but I had to recognize that I had it and to sort of own it. And I think it's the same with authority. You have the authority. The children, your children look to you, especially if they're younger, for guidance, for protection, for leadership, for care. You have all that authority. So acknowledge it and now use it.
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the other things that I'm just kind of thinking about, what does loving authority look like? And let's pick this thing kind of about screens and internet usage and all that sort of stuff. You have actually a lot of authority in that you can turn off the internet.
You pay for the internet.
And this is actually one of those examples where you do have a lot of levers. You do have a lot of control over that situation, in a sense, because, you know, if you're paying for the cell phone, but the child is abusing that privilege, stop paying for it. Or, you know, there's a lot of these devices you can get, your router, you can actually turn off internet access for certain devices. I can see on my Google Home app all the different things that are connected to our internet, and I can stop the connection for any single one of them right from the little device in my pocket. So I think there's things like that you can do. And the question was sort of one of these other questions is, is it a contradiction if you are allowing the child to be free to choose, but then there's other things where you kind of lay down the law? And I think, I guess what I want to say about that is there are situations where the child is free to choose, but what we're trying to do is create choices that both of them are good choices. You know, do you want to wear the red shoes or the yellow shoes? And hopefully there's not a situation where you're in a place where you're kind of forced to lay down the law. Laying down the law in Love and Logic, just it doesn't look like that. It looks like before you've gotten into the situation, you've created a clear expectation and boundary. Like, an hour of TV every night for kids who have finished homework. That's the clear boundary. And if homework isn't finished, then there just is no TV. Like, there's no laying down the law. You just don't turn on the TV, or you remove the plug from the wall or whatever it is, you know. So, yeah, go ahead, Stephanie.
Yeah, I think that laying down the – well, that it's – when we talked about giving options in one of our previous episodes, that if the child is not doing that correctly, or if they're not choosing one of the options that you presented, then you choose. You get to choose, mm-hmm. because yes. ultimately that falls back on you as the leader. So
yeah,
if the child cannot do it in a situation where both options are fine and they're just not having it, then that falls on you. And you choose. And I think that's what we mean by laying down the law, but it's maybe not in the authoritarian way that we typically think of that statement.
Right. And so one of the examples that we heard from a parent was, you know, no frozen treats before dinner, and a child will then go and defiantly take it out of the freezer and eat the whatever frozen treat there is. And, you know, what would the appropriate response be to a child that defiantly goes and takes a frozen treat out of the freezer before dinner and eats it, even though you've said that that's not appropriate? Would it be something like taking away the iPad? And I would say, you know, that is exercising authority, but that is not necessarily a logical consequence.
There's no connection between and iPad. They're complete. Right. They have no relation to each other.
And the iPad is a very powerful, wonderful device, and I'm sure that sends a strong message to the child. But again, it's more in that punishment. You did something wrong, and so I'm taking something away from you, not in the natural consequence. So the natural consequence of that would be, oh, it looks like that's what you're having for dinner tonight, because, you know, clearly you have no room for dinner, and you know that popsicles only come after dinner, so I guess you're not having dinner tonight. Like, that would be a natural consequence. And again, the child isn't going to starve. The child has just had a popsicle. But also, and if that's not your style, another thing you could say is, it looks like we can't have popsicles because I can't trust you to follow the rules when it comes to popsicles. So we'll take a break from having popsicles in the house for a while. And when I feel like I can trust you again, I'll start buying them in the grocery store. So, and that's it. No argument. Like they may, and the other love and logic phrase that is a good one to remember is, I love you too much to argue. Or, you know, and there may, Stephanie, you may remember some others since you've been to the training more recently than I have, but
that was a good one though.
You know, yeah, if there's like, this is an unwinnable argument for everybody. If you've said, we're going to take a break from popsicles for a while until I feel like I can trust you, those are the last words that come out of your mouth. And if there's protest and defiant, and there will be, because again, this is how a child learns that boundaries are actual real things. You know, I love you too much to argue. And that's it, you know? And you can show, obviously, hopefully you're showing empathy. Like, I know this is hard, but I love you too much to argue.
And that's you using really your authority.
Lovely.
The purchasing authority you have as the grocery shopper.
Yeah. I guess and we won't be able to have popsicles anymore because I don't think we can, you know, fill in the blank, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. The other question we got from a parent was, what about helping with studying? Because one of the big ideas in love and logic is you let children experience the consequences of their actions. And so does that mean that we just kind of let a child flounder in some subject that they're not doing well in or whatever? And no, the idea is not you let a child flounder. You do want children to, you don't want to get to a situation, obviously, where you're doing the work for them. You also don't want to be in a situation where you were just kind of barking at them like, have you done your homework? And I told you to, like the drill sergeant, that's not what you want to do. The idea would be to create something where you can offer help when they are open to it. Some children will come to you and ask you for help, and you need to be careful that you don't start doing the work for them. Your help is going to be mostly asking questions and helping them do the work. There are some children that aren't not going to want help, and maybe you can say one of the phrases that we found really effective is, would you like to hear what some other children have done in this situation? Like some resources that they have found helpful. And then they get to decide, well, do I want to know those things or not? Again, you let them have some agency. It's not you telling them what to do. So I think, yeah. And of course, and we should probably say this at the top of every episode. Like if you, there are so many different kinds of kids, and there's kids that are sort of typical and atypical in terms of cognitive and neurological skill sets and all that sort of stuff. So again, the idea of love and logic is that you allow creativity to the parents to figure out within these basic principles, natural consequences, empathy, and loving authority, like how do you structure this in your situation that makes sense to you.
And before we started recording, Aaron, you were even mentioning kind of setting up even incentives for children that becomes a kind of boundary. Children who make all A's, we go out for ice cream on the weekends or whatever, whatever you want it to be.
Right.
You're creating natural consequence that the child can understand. Because grades can be a little theoretical and academic achievement. And so you want to create a natural consequence that they can get.
Yeah. So that's the thing about grades and school. A lot of it does seem irrelevant to kids. When am I ever going to have to use this? That sort of thing. And it can be hard. Some children are naturally curious and more motivated academically than others. Some are like, you know, they live to get a straight A report card and that motivates them. And some children just are not going to be motivated by that at all. They couldn't care less. So how do you create a structure where, again, the child will see the importance of his or her own hard work in school and will receive rewards for doing that hard work on their own and the dignity that comes from that, as opposed to a parent like trying to force them into caring about grades, which they don't care about. So what we did in our household was that we thought for a kid, school is almost like their job. And in the real world, when you do a good job in your profession, you are rewarded for it, often monetarily in other ways. So we created a almost sort of like a salary. Not the way we did allowance was that when you get your report card, whatever grade you're in, you get a dollar for how many years that grade. So like if you're in third grade, an A gets you $3. And a B would be $2. A C would be $1. And you don't get anything, no money below a C. And every year it goes up based on your grade level. But this sort of helps them think about it, you know, in your job, listener, there's probably things that are not your favorite part of your job, but you do know that you have to do them because you need to hopefully stay employed and move up in your career. So that was the boundary and the sort of the economy that we created, the natural system. Like we will, you know, like this is like your job and you will get paid for this. And so, and our kids responded to that because money was something concrete that they could understand that they could then use to get things they want and all that sort of stuff. So that's how it worked for us. And that worked pretty well. And people do money with love and logic different ways. Some people kind of connect it to chores. If you do your chores every week without me having to ask you, you get a certain dollar amount. So anyways, that's kind of the philosophy,
and it's the same,
that we use.
It's the same principle no matter what. So
yeah. Yeah. And one more thing, this a parent said, you know, how do you help this is again making the connection with choices and consequences. What if the child doesn't do well on a test and just feels it's because they weren't smart, like as opposed to they didn't work hard? And that reminded me of a thing that is really true. Love and Logic does a great job in giving parents vocabulary for how to praise your children. And one of the things that I learned and still use today is, when your child does well on a test, you don't say, "You're so smart." You say, "Wow, you must have really worked hard on that." So you connect it to something the child has control over, which is how much they study, as opposed to some natural gift that they may or may not have. And so, anyways, thinking through how you praise a child is going to be an important thing. And maybe we should do just an episode on that. Who knows? I remember
my dad actually empathizing with me in high school in math. Actually, I did okay in math, but he really struggled in school with high school math. And I just remember him having a little bit of empathy on report cards when it comes to that, because, you know, we all kind of have our own things that we're working through. And so I think that goes into how we encourage others too.
Yeah. I mean, I think you know your child, if they're working hard in a given subject is a B, then, you know, that's what it is. You connect it with the achievement that they've made.
They worked really hard for that B.
Natural intelligence. That's exactly right. Not the natural intelligence that they have or the limitations that they have.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. And one final question from a parent, like, what do we think about internet usage and access, because there's so much bad stuff out there. And you could apply the same thing to what kind of music should my child listen to? What kind of TV show should they watch? And obviously there are things that are inappropriate, and there's going to be some subjectivity to making those decisions depending on your household and whatever. But one of the things that was some good advice we got is that for some things, and this gets maybe more into kind of like the middle school and high school stage, but there are some things we would like our children to experience while they are in our house so we can talk about them, as opposed to sheltering them completely from them. And then when they graduate from high school, they're thrown into a situation that they really haven't had to deal with before. So, you know, if a movie has some bad words in it, but some really important ideas, there might be an age at which you would watch that movie, for example, and talk about, you know, what do bad words mean and why do people use them and why do some people think they're bad, and are there times when you would use them or would you never use them, or you know, why was that man saying that at the golf course the other day when he was waving his club around? So, you know,
is this Happy Gilmore an important educational movie for all young children?
That's right. So these are the conversations you can have while they're still in your house. But yeah, I'm definitely someone who is an advocate of, you know, filters on the web browsers and stuff like that, because you do want to protect your child from something that would be traumatizing. But again, you can't protect them from everything. And one of the things is being able to have these conversations while they're still in your house.
Right. Well, I think that does it for our Q&A. We don't have any more, at least for this week. If you have any more questions for us based on what you've already heard, shoot us an email at nothomealone@stalbanswaco.org, and we will get to your question for sure. We will also have a little bit of an episode towards the end of the series where we can address more questions. But unless y'all have anything else, I think that's probably going to do it for us today.
Well, I would say go on iTunes or actually Apple Podcasts and give us a rating and a review. That
yes.
helps get the message out to more people. Again, the natural consequences of you giving us a bad rating is negative for Stephanie's salary. So please make sure. I'm just kidding. It's a joke.
Sad trombone. Just kidding. Yeah.
Yeah.
But really, yeah. Actually, those do help with more people seeing the podcast. So share it on social media. Give us a review on the podcast app. And that would be awesome. So we hope that you're doing okay. We hope you had a great Thanksgiving. And we will see you next time.
Peace.